he saw a time where if enough people just started exercising freedom, the free market would eventually just naturally exclude the government. It would push government into a position of irrelevance. Welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast, where we discuss the journey to real liberty through self-sufficiency, counter-economics, non-aggression, and the agora.
The Outpost represents the border between societal norm and the pioneer spirit. Every episode contains practical, philosophical, and technical information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. I am Regina, and I am here with Cyrus.
Good morning.
And today we are talking about agorism, part one. What is agorism? It may be a term you've never heard of. I know that was the case for me about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah, well, agorism is it is a direct splinter from the libertarianism, and it's considered by libertarians to be radical libertarianism, because it is the furthest extreme of what libertarianism is.
Interesting.
It was founded by Samuel Edward Konkin III, who often referred to himself as SEK3.
So if that makes sense.
he was kind of a sci-fi guy. So I think that's like a tribute to science fiction. I don't know. But
that would make sense, yep.
Right.
So he goes by a moniker. That's cool.
Right. So if you hear me say SEK3, that's what that is. But I normally just refer to him as Konkin. Anyway, that was in the 1970s. And for those of you who want to dig in deeper than where we'll go, he wrote two books, the first one being The New Libertarian Manifesto, the second one being The Agorist Primer. And he was also a publisher. He published a lot of different writings. They're pretty obscure, but you can find them. He had like, I don't know, four or five different publications between the 70s and maybe 90s.
So can we get these books on the show notes? Like, we can find them, right?
Yeah, those two specifically, yeah, you can find them. And we can
link
to them.
Yeah, let's go ahead and link to those. I don't know if they're Amazon or not. Yeah, we'll have links to those so you guys can follow up for sure. I know I started listening to one at one point and then I stopped.
Yeah.
Because the recordings just weren't that great.
Yeah. I mean, he's really got a different kind of writing style that you kind of have to get used to. But they're short reads, so shouldn't be too much of a problem. That bird is really loud.
Is that bird really loud? Yeah, I have a little fan out of my window right now. I'm sure you can all hear him.
Yes.
He's quiet now. He went away. But I'm in the nature today, so I might have some nature noises in the background.
Awesome. Yep.
He was commenting very sternly about our topic.
Well, yeah. I mean, being that he's a bird, I'm sure he's not a statist, so...
No, he's
probably
a supporter.
Agreeing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was an agorist bird. Mm-hmm. So this is a relatively new spin on libertarianism. I mean, the 1970s, that's like 50 years ago now.
Yeah, which
it's
is new.
It's still pretty new. Yeah, yeah, that's still in modern day times.
Right. So, you know, it gets its roots directly from libertarianism and the teachings of Murray Rothbard, who Konkin knew and they discussed, and you can dig deep and find correspondence between the two because they argued about this very topic.
So who's Murray Rothbard? I've never heard of him before.
Murray Rothbard
there he is again.
I mean, yeah. I'm not sure, but he was from the 1950s, started preaching libertarianism and Austrian economics and things like that, promoting views from people like Mises. And so he was a strong proponent of libertarianism. The difference, the real difference between the two, is that Murray Rothbard thought that we should use the political process to further libertarianism, which is actually where the Libertarian Party today, that's where it came from. They founded the Libertarian Party. And
yeah,
so that's where the difference is. Konkin finally reached a point where he said, you know what, using the state is inconsistent with our views. It's yeah. it's a, you know, it, like we were talking about in the last, I don't know which episode it was, but I think it was the Antifa episode where I talked about how you have to really look at your beliefs closely and make sure there are no contradictions. And if there is a contradiction, yeah. you have to weed it out. And that's where agorism came from, this contradiction about using the state to fix the state. And that you can't say on one side that the state is an institution of violence, and now I'm going to use the state to get rid of violence.
Yeah, but
there's a
right.
contradiction there. So Konkin has this kind of famous little saying where he goes on this rant and talks about how that works out is you have a police officer who is claiming to be a libertarian. He's working through the system to change the system, and he busts down your door because you're smoking weed, and he puts you in jail, where another libertarian who's working his way through the system as a jailer now puts you into a cage. And, you know, or the judge who's a libertarian working his way through the system convicts you, and you end up in prison. And all these people who are working through the system as libertarians to change the system has put the only true libertarian in jail.
Right.
You know, so that's,
well,
that's,
before we keep going, I feel that we should define libertarianism and then go into agorism. And I think we all have a good feel of what libertarianism is, but let's define what that is first.
Okay, well, that's pretty tough. I mean, because you can get a different... there's as many definitions of libertarianism as there are libertarians, because they don't all agree
right.
either. But basically, libertarian is full liberty, like...
less government, more real freedom.
Right. And you have this spectrum within libertarianism about what is enough government. You know, some libertarians will say only for national defense. And then, you know, then that will lead some libertarians to say, okay, well, that's got to include immigration. So, yeah, we got to build a wall. And so there's this spectrum within libertarianism about how much government is the right amount of government.
Okay.
But
yeah.
they're all. But,
and that
but,
gets really sticky.
Yeah. And they talk about voluntary interactions, and they talk about nonviolence in the same way that agorism does. But
yeah, I had a listener ask me if I was a voluntarist, and all these terms are pretty new to me, so I just quickly Googled it and looked up what a voluntarist is, and that's, you know, mutual consent transactions between two people. So
right.
I'm like, well, yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, consensualism,
yeah.
which is at the heart of agorism and anarchy and
right.
counter-economics. So, but I don't know much more than that on voluntarianism.
There are a few terms that kind of get grouped together that can all pretty easily be interchangeable. And there's usually just minor differences. So voluntarism, agorism, anarcho-capitalism, those are all kind of within the same realm. And they just
yeah.
have little small differences. And I don't even know what all of those differences are, because, I mean, there are people who get much more into segregating these groups with these hyphens than I do. Because
right.
And more so than most agorists, because agorists typically are the people who have reached the point where they are done discussing freedom, and they just start living freedom. And so that's kind of how I view agorism. We are the people who are just done talking and bitching and arguing about it, and we're just going to do
all the little nuances and how much government and less government, mm-hmm. and it's just like, no government. How about that?
Yeah. How about let's ignore it. Yeah.
How about just opting out and no government involvement in my life as much as humanly possible?
Right. And that's what Konkin was saying. That's the big divide where he split off from libertarianism, because he said, you know, the only way to really make this, the only way to get to freedom is to just start exercising freedom. And he believed in the free market to the point that he saw a time where if enough people just started exercising freedom, the free market would eventually just naturally exclude the government. It would push government into a position of irrelevance. And, you know, what's interesting is he, in his books and in his writings, he kind of laid out these phases of how he saw it going down, how he saw this happening over long periods of time. And one of his phases that he talked about was that as more people started participating in agoristic activities, the government would begin to see the problem, and the first step the government would take would be co-opting these agorism activities, which is really interesting because we have a really recent example of that already happening. So we've already moved into a new phase that Konkin predicted. And so the example is this: Uber. When Uber first came out, it was illegal. Yeah. Like it wasn't legal to give people rides like you're a taxi unless you had a taxi license and all these different things. It was illegal in most states. And so think of the risk. The people who started Uber, and I don't know who they are, don't know anything about them, but they put in all this capital, however much it was, on something that was illegal.
Right.
So what a risk, right? But that's what the entrepreneur is, and that's what the agorist is, to take a risk, to do something that... Yeah. And so what happened was the popularity of Uber rose so fast that the government couldn't shut it down, so they just co-opted it. They just made it legal. Yeah. And that was directly predicted by Konkin.
Well, and we actually wrote a book, How to Start a Stealth Business Using Counter-Economics, that helps you mitigate the risks while operating a discreet business, keeping the government out of your business.
Right, which is agorism.
It's basically a book based on what I call applicable agorism, which is putting agorism into action. So, removing government from your business in both taxation, permitting, licensing, but also doing these things safely and discreetly so you are at extreme low risk of being penalized or caught even. It's really a good book.
Yeah. And if you are producing a product or service that people want and you are doing a great job of it, you will be successful, even though what you're doing may be considered illegal by the government, just like
quote-unquote illegal.
Yeah. Right. That is the exact example of Uber. And I'm sure there are other examples of that also, but Uber is the one that everybody should know.
So agorism is removing government from your life, more or less, correct?
Yeah. It is ignoring the government in the sense that you just don't ask its permission to do the things that you want to do.
Yeah.
I'm
cool with that.
Yeah, so getting government out of your life, we're not in a place where we can fully do that yet, but you ignore the government in one aspect where you're just not asking permission to do things. You have to pay attention to government in the other aspect, because you don't want to get caught doing what you're doing. If what you're doing is in the gray market or the black market, you know, you've got to pay attention to the state because, you know, they're going to try and trip you up. So it's a game of cat and mouse that you've got to pay attention to.
Yeah, you don't want to take this to the point of being stupid and getting caught and thrown in jail or prison. I don't think anybody wants that.
Right.
But there are certain ways to skirt around government and laws and just function perfectly fine within your little realm of life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Just start living. Yeah, just start living as if you are already free.
Yeah.
And so that was the big split. And, you know, Konkin said that, you know, participation in the state to change the state is, one, he said it was immoral. And two, it's a waste of time. It's just never going to work. Because, right. You know, just like revolution through violence has never worked, revolution through politics has never worked either. So, exactly. I mean, not to the extent to where you reach freedom. Revolution through violence and politics have both worked in the sense that one regime has taken over from another regime, and maybe the regime that took over is a little bit better than the last one, but you still don't have freedom at the end.
You're still in a regime.
Yeah, yeah. And so agorism is the evolution of revolution. It's a new way.
Ooh, T-shirt yeah. slogan.
T-shirts. Evolution
t-shirt,
of revolution.
T-shirt. So, I think we need to make that into a t-shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd wear one.
Hashtag evolution of revolution.
Yeah.
Maybe I should make that an Instagram hashtag.
That'd be cool. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So what do you mean by evolution of revolution?
So, well, I mean, we have lots of historical data to look at about revolutions. And they've never worked. And they've all been done in one of two ways, through politics or through violence. This is a new way. This is a revolution in the sense that agorism is a free market means to a free market ends. So it's a way to get to freedom. And you get there by using freedom. It's a free market means to a free market ends.
Yeah.
And it's just a new idea about how to change things.
So basically, you change it by deciding you're just not going to participate?
That's the first step. But what happens over time, if enough people begin to live this way in small increments, they take more and more power away from the government. Because the government has these pillars of power in our system. So, for example, money. Money is a pillar of power for the government. It controls the money system. You know, you get a job, they collect their cut. It's, you know, you've got to give them all this information to get a job, to get, I mean, everything. Our whole system is based around money that the government controls. So that's a huge pillar of power. And so agorism comes along and says, hey, how about this new thing called cryptocurrency, which... I don't know if the person who, the anonymous person who started Bitcoin was an agorist, but I can almost certainly, it is a high probability that he knew exactly what he was doing. He or she knew exactly what they were doing.
He was a huge nerd that made an awesome piece of code that worked beautifully and possibly was also an agorist as well. Unhappy with the banking system, the Fed, the IRS, the control.
Right.
It's very mysterious, the beginnings of Bitcoin, but we made a great episode on cryptocurrency a few episodes back. The cryptocurrency icebreaker and how to use it, like, basically with counter-economics.
Yeah.
Which is a huge thing in all of our episodes. Counter-economics typically comes up in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of the linchpin that holds everything together, in my opinion. At least my worldview, it is.
Well, that's where the money is where it hurts the most for dismantling government. So if we all moved into alternative money systems, which is why they're so scared of gold and silver, and they're so scared of cryptocurrencies, and they're trying to regulate crypto as best they can, but you just can't. The way it's built.
And they will try and co-opt that, which they're already doing. I mean, China's already about to roll out their own. It's not a cryptocurrency, but it is a digital currency to compete with cryptocurrency. And all governments are going to do that.
It uses the same technology. It uses blockchain. So they're making centralized cryptocurrencies.
Right.
And in the form of digital dollars or digital yuan or whatever. So they'll roll that out, but they can't destroy our decentralized coins. It's impossible.
Right. But they will try and control it, you know, just like they did with paper money. They made it a law that you can only use this currency. You know, before there was a time in our history in this country where we had several different currencies. Each state had its own currency. Some towns had their own currencies. And so the government comes along and says you can only use this currency. So they'll try to do the same thing with digital currencies. But to get back to the point that, you know, the first step is to just start living like you're free. And as enough people do that, we begin to take the power away from the government in these pillars of power that they use, you know, to control us, like money. Another is communications, employment, the justice system, security. Over time, we can develop these our own systems to replace the government systems. They'll work better, and so more people will, over time, start to use them. And that's where the real change will begin to happen, and we'll go through these phases like Konkin wrote in his writings. There will come a time when the government will actually try to stop it.
Yeah.
And, you know, for example, take the justice system. The government controls the justice system, which, if you really think about it, there's no way it can morally be done that way. Because if you and I disagree about something, I think I'm right, you think you're right, you've wronged me or I've wronged you or whatever, and we can't come to a conclusion about how to solve this problem, we need a third party to step in and say, and look at both sides objectively, because you and I can't look at it objectively, and then they make a judgment and say, look, here's what you guys need to do to solve this problem. That's what justice is. The government is the arbiter of its own grievances. So like when you get a ticket and you want to go fight it in court,
you're already fighting a losing battle.
Right. The judge works for the other side. You know, so
the odds are stacked against you with any grievances with the government itself, because the government is acting as its own intermediary, which doesn't make sense.
And so in the money system, we've got cryptocurrency, which is going to start to hack away at that power structure. And in the justice system, we've got the idea of what do they call it? Moderation. Is that that's not the right word. I'm using the wrong word. Arbitration. So arbitration can be a private justice system. Now, at this point in time, we only have arbitration to settle contractual disputes, but it can be done. A whole private justice system can be set up to handle everything there is in justice, because justice is just making a wrong right, whether it's financial or whatever. People should not go to jail because they've wronged someone financially. That's an easy solution. They have to make whatever they did right, you know? And so that can all be done privately. And then, anyway, I'm getting too far down the rabbit hole to just describe agorism. But
well, you know what I saw yesterday?
What's that?
At the Coinstar, you can buy Bitcoin at Coinstar now with cash.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what is Coinstar?
Well, Coinstar is the little machine where you take your coins and they turn them into dollars for you. So you have a bunch of spare change, you dump it in, and they charge a ridiculous fee, like 11%. So there's no way I ever take my coins there. But people do. People do it all the time.
I've seen those.
Yeah, they're at like every freaking grocery store.
So you can take your change and get Bitcoin.
Yeah, or dollars. Up to $2,500 you can buy at a time. I mean, that's pretty good amount.
So I'm trying to understand this, make sure I get it right. I've got a bunch of change, and I go to a Coinstar. I dump my change into this machine, and it will pay me with Bitcoin.
I think that there's a middle step of change to dollars and dollars to Bitcoin, I think. But I haven't tried it. So it could go from change directly into Bitcoin. And I'm pretty sure they waive the 11% fee right now to change your coins into dollars because of the quote-unquote coin shortage. Oh, and I went to the frickin' bank yesterday, and I had to argue to get a roll of quarters. Well, I kind of groveled more than argued. Like, man, I got to do my laundry. No one's going to give me quarters for this. Can you make an exception?
Like, they're not giving out quarters at the bank. Wow.
Yeah, they're like, we'll make an exception for you. We're only allowing one roll of quarters per customer, and you usually have to be a customer of the bank, but we'll go ahead and give you quarters this time. I'm like, well, thanks, I think. So, wow. But back to the Coinstar thing. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
That's really powerful.
Up to $2,500, you can put cash. So let's say you start your counter economics business as described in our book or free PDF. And you're getting cash and you're like, man, I don't know if I trust the cash system right now. I want an alternative investment. I'm going to take my earnings up to $2,500 per transaction, go to Coinstar, turn my dollars into Bitcoin. It prints out a voucher, and this is where I'm not sure and I have to try it. You take the voucher, you go online, you type in your purchase number, your purchase code, and it gives you your Bitcoin to your wallet. That step, I'm not sure if they do a Know Your Customer event, which is when you have to register with your personal right. information. I don't know Coinstar's KYC, but I bet it's, you know, there's always an under limit. So let's say your limit is, well, you can only do $1,000 before you have to KYC. Well, then you just do separate transactions at separate Coinstars.
Yeah, I see.
But I have to look into it, and I want to look into it, because this would be a very easy way for people to discreetly buy Bitcoin without reporting their income.
That's powerful. Yeah, we got to check into that.
I'm very curious about it, so I'm going to do that. Like, very soon, I'm going to do the actual transaction and see what the process is and what they require. Because if they just allow you to plop it onto a Bitcoin address without taking any of your personal information, like, you are set. Because right. how many Coinstars? There's a Coinstar in every grocery store with a limit of $2,500. You can
Walmart.
Literally circulate around. Yep, Walmart's. I'm not sure if, like, Lowe's and Home Depot's do it, but I think they do. So if you've got 10 to 20 Coinstars in your town with a $2,500 limit, you're able to move a lot of cash to Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Kind of interesting. So anyways, back to the topic. So I wanted to go into, like, counter economics a little bit. And we've discussed counter economics in a lot of our episodes because it's so powerful and it just goes with everything we talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So how does counter economics play into agorism and or vice versa?
Okay, so it's really simple. Agorism is really just kind of the theory, and counter economics is the action. So
yep.
Konkin calls it direct action. That's what the counter economics is. It's the underground economy. It's the direct action of agorism.
In the attempt to starve the money from the government.
Right. So you are intentionally trying to avoid taxation. You are intentionally trying to avoid paying permits and licenses, and everywhere the state tries to take money from you, you are trying to avoid it.
Yeah.
And I'll also mention here, Konkin was a purist. You know, his belief was if you're not completely separated from the state, you're just not an agorist, really.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
I mean, yeah, he softened up later, you know, later on he began to soften. But my opinion is that you play both sides. Where you can be a agorist, you be an agorist. And where you've got to interact with the state, you interact with the state. At all times, making conscious decisions about, can I not interact with the state? And if it doesn't make sense to do it, you know, or you just got to decide for yourself. It's kind of like, well, here's a good example of how I recently changed my position on something. So COVID came around, the economy got shut down, and the government started sending out checks, right?
Mm.
Now, I do not accept benefits from the government because I don't want them to be able to say, because you accept benefits from us, you have to do what we say.
Yeah.
On the other hand, as an agorist, if you can take some money from the state, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, if the goal of agorism is to starve the state, then you should take money that they want to give you.
Well, and you can use that money to jumpstart a business like I did.
Right.
My seeds business. I took my $1,200 check and invested into a small business that's actually doing well. And
right.
I'm not going to pay taxes on that.
Right.
No
so
way.
You're, it's like a double whammy. You're hitting them twice. You're taking money out of their pocket and you're not giving any back.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Exactly. Well, and I like the concept of using their tactics against them and working within their systems to help myself and defeat their, you know, like playing chess.
Right.
You've got to play the game of chess, but you're playing to win.
Mm-hmm.
Which I do within the economic system more than anything. That's where it's,
yeah.
You know, you can play around.
Right. And there are some other points that are important to mention about agorism also. Agorism, along with libertarianism in this point, says that the free market is the only regulator. The government should not regulate anything, period.
Mm.
The free market should be the only regulator. Because if the government gets... The only way things like discrimination and monopoly, the only way that happens is with government. That can't happen. It can't happen in a free market. But
a truly free market will take care of itself. And people tend to think that's not the case because we've been messaged that without government, our free markets would go haywire. But it's actually, I believe, the opposite would happen.
Yeah. And people will argue against capitalism, for example, especially the younger socialists talk about the evils of capitalism and all that. And if you just ask them about what capitalism are you talking about? Because everybody thinks we live in capitalism here in the US, and we don't. This is
we don't.
This is not capitalism.
There's Keynesian economics, which is totally messed up. I mean, there's no natural balance of our open markets, quote unquote.
Right. If there is regulation by the state, it is not capitalism.
Exactly.
So
we're regulated halfway to death. And then they step in and do all kinds of crazy shit in the housing markets and the financial markets. And they're constantly just like dabbling and poking and prodding markets to achieve all these unnatural results. Like, for example, they will give a credit to first-time home buyers. And so all these first-time home buyers run out and buy a bunch of homes with this government credit. So that creates an artificial demand. But then at some point, that will be exhausted, and then there's going to be a slump after. So then they create another bubble-type situation that gets people to buy more properties, whether it's, you know, what is it with the percentage? Your interest payments and decreasing the interest so you can get a loan for cheaper. So there's this constant manipulation going on from the government to catch up to its last manipulation. So it's never truly like free and open. There's never a real true balance of supply and demand because they're always dabbling in crap, making these massive artificial bubbles. And then these bubbles eventually pop.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that happens, it's crazy. But then they artificially pump up the market to keep the bubble from popping, which is where we're at now.
And it's unpopular to say this, but some people shouldn't own houses. They're just not financially in a position to be able to do it yet. But when the government steps in and says, you know, we'll give you $5,000 for your down payment if you're a first time home buyer. Well, now there's a bunch of first time home buyers who really have no business buying a house yet because financially they're not ready. They get into a house that they can't really afford, and then the economy dips enough that now they can't make their payments and the bubble bursts.
Exactly.
But capitalism and free market is what would say to that person, you can't buy a house yet. You know, if you can't save up $5,000, you know, go save up $5,000, prove that you know you can manage money well enough to do that, and then come back. That's what the free market does.
Right.
So that's one point about agorism. Agorism believes that the free market is the only regulator. Agorism is any activity that is peaceful and voluntary. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about this, I want to go into the five markets that agorism describes, because we always talk about the gray market and the black market. But within agorism, the philosophy of agorism describes five different markets, which I don't think we've ever touched on all five. So I'm going to list the five markets of agorism. They are the white market, they are the pink market, the red market, the gray market, and the black market. And they are very distinct markets, and they all have to do with whether violence is involved with the market and whether government regulates that market or strictly prohibits that market. So those are the three factors that make the five markets.
Yeah, two of those I had never heard of before my introduction to agorism. So those will be interesting to cover in next week's episode.
Yeah, we've run out of time, so that'll have to be in part two. And what we will also discuss in part two are the class structures within agorism, because agorism defines class structure, and that is the producer class and the parasite class.
Oh, okay. Yeah, those are very interesting things that make me want to tune in next time.
Yeah.
So in wrapping up, I feel like we've all been kind of forced into choosing a box or ticking a box, which has been, which has become Democrat or Republican. And I've personally never felt like either. So I tend to align myself with the quote unquote independent, which is very just kind of weird and vague to me. So I've always felt kind of like a little bit of an oddball, especially like working on the oil and gas pipeline where everyone is very red. But then I'm also from California where everyone is very blue. So I've really seen both sides. Mm-hmm. And so now we have these massive conflicts between these two parties, and people almost want you to pick a side on, you know, social media and social groups. And I realized I'm neither of these, and that I want to completely opt out of this crap. And so once I had learned about agorism, I knew immediately. I'm like, oh, yep, that's exactly where I'm at.
Yeah.
That is me. And now I have an identity, in a sense, where I had not had one before. So I'm hoping that maybe some of our listeners out there might be feeling the same way as I have my whole life.
Yeah.
That you can opt out. You do not have to be a Democrat. You do not have to be a Republican, etc., ad nauseum. You can just opt out into the entire system, which I have been strategically working on much more so lately than ever before, but I have also worked on my entire life without even realizing it.
Right. So your entire life, you were trying to opt out, and in kind of a subconscious sense, now you know that it's a thing. Like before, like it wasn't a thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at least that's how it was for me. Like, I always felt like I didn't want to pay taxes and support all this stuff that I disagree with, but I just never saw it as an option because it was illegal and I didn't want to be a bad citizen. And
yeah, all those messages.
Yeah, all of that brainwashing, basically. And then you run across something that says, hey, look, it's okay. It's actually good. You should be doing this. you know? And right. so now you have a group to identify with, other people who also feel the same way you do.
Yeah, because I always considered myself a little bit of a lone ranger, a little bit of an oddball. I've always practiced counter economics, just as a sheerly as a survival mechanism as a single parent. Mm-hmm. I always had some sort of side hustle where I was getting cash in my pocket on top of working two jobs. So yeah. I'm no stranger to that. But now I feel like I have a meaning or a purpose behind that all, and that I can opt out, and it's healthy for me to opt out. And there are also others opting out that I can relate to now. Mm-hmm. Whereas before I was just like feeling like I was on my own.
Right. And that was why it was important for us. You know, our the first thing we did when we're thinking, how do we help people, was to make that PDF, that list of all those different ways that you can earn a dollar, create a side hustle that can become a part-time deal, that can become a full-time deal, and set it up in such a way that you are avoiding the state, ignoring the state, just like we're talking about. And so we did that. And then we thought, well, you've got to, now someone has an idea of what they can do, but maybe they don't know how to actually do it, you know, safely, because a lot of the things are either not quite legal or directly illegal, you know. Mm-hmm. So how do you set up that kind of business safely and discreetly and with as little risk as possible? And that's why we wrote the ebook, to make a comprehensive kind of thing about these are the things you've got to do. These are the things you got to think about when you're making a business decision. These are the 7 principles to run through your mind when you make that decision, so that you can make a safe decision, you know? And so that's why we wrote the ebook.
And they're all tried and true methods that we've been practicing for several years, decades. So
yeah,
we know they work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the ebook is great. The PDF is a great place to start. The ebook is a great place to advance. And you are not alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can grab that PDF for free. It's simple. We send it right to your email box. You open it up and start reading it.
Yep, exactly. TheOffGridOutpost.com. Well, I think this is a good time to wrap up this episode. Very fascinating stuff. And please leave us a review on whatever platform you are listening on. It helps other people hear the message. You can email us at theoffgridoutpost@gmail.com. with any questions or comments. You can also leave us a voice message. The link is in the show notes below. And make sure to visit theoffgridoutpost.com for lots of interesting content, including free stuff.
Yep.
Yep. Tune in next time and have a wonderful day.
Talk to you later.
Peace.
Here's a little teaser for what's coming next week. You know, especially if you're going to DIY it, you definitely want to use local
DIY
stuff.
It's going to be,
What did I say it wrong?
DIY it.
I said DIY.
Do yourself it. Uh-huh. I mean, you could do that all you want, but. Right.
Thanks for listening to the Off-Grid Outpost podcast. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to subscribe so you can get all the new episodes.